You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
I think I got it. The Jakes. How about the Jakes?
What would it stand for?
Jakes.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to your most favorite show in the whole wide world. It's Under the Radar. With me, as always, your friend of mine, Derek Van Ryback.
I've been thinking about this a lot lately, you guys. If we get back to playing softball, like in the fall or something, and I hit a home run, am I going to yell, Under the Radar, like as the ball is clearing the fence? Am I going to have something like that I do just because I don't know how to hang out with people anymore?
Yes. I wish you wouldn't. I hope someone tapes that.
Everyone's going to look at me like, what did he say? It's going to be like the Pete Weber celebration.
And also here, my friend of yours, Ekan.
Hello, my friends. Thank you for your patience. Had a little microphone problem that DVR, as the technical advisor and all-around genius on our show, was able to walk and talk me through it. So I am here without the echo. I am pleased for that.
Thank you for your patience in hitting play and this being a normal show.
Yes.
It's not like they were waiting for this to start, right?
I'm talking to you guys. Thank you for your patience.
You're welcome. Good show today. I got some stuff that I find, like, you know, as we're rolling through spring training, there's some stuff that's popping up that's perplexing me as a fantasy player and a human being that I want to get into. We got to shout out Mike Kurland a little later. Like, he's doing like the Lord's work, I guess you would call it, with lineups. I don't know if you guys follow him. I don't know if you are.
Yes, I like Mike Kurland. Yep. He's a nice man, too. Nice
like guy. Incredible stuff. I don't know where he has the time. But let's get into our drafts. And also shout out Caitlin McGrath. We're going to get into her in a little bit because the stuff she's writing for the Blue Jays, like I sent her a note. I'm like, congratulations on being an unofficial fantasy writer because all the Blue Jays stuff she's writing is fantasy appropriate, which has been great.
I haven't read the article. So is there any talk about come on, Biggio?
No, she's done a lot of the starters. She got into Rowdy Tellez. I think she's done like a couple on Rowdy Tellez.
What does she say about Rowdy?
That he's handling two strikes or he handled two strikes better last year. His strikeout rate is down. I think mm-hmm. she's a fan of Rowdy Tellez, as all
his name
as
is
all
Rowdy. Come on, man. His name is Rowdy Tellez. Like if it was a video game and you would name your first baseman batting fourth Rowdy Tellez, I mean, it'd be like the name in a movie, and nobody would believe it. Like nobody's named like Rowdy. Who's Rowdy? I like it though. I like Rowdy Tellez.
Me too. He was actually, you know, it's almost OOT. I was going to say he's an old OOTP guy of mine, Rowdy Tellez and Christian Walker.
Oh, Christian. Wait, can we talk about Christian Walker?
Yeah.
Everyone asks me about Christian Walker, and I never know what to say. I know that Cushing loves him and always is like, no, Christian Walker. And I'm always like, really, man? Really? And then people ask me about Christian Walker. I just sort of, he's like one of those guys, I just kind of throw my hands up. I'm like, I don't know. What do you think? So please teach me. Tell me. Let me know.
What do you mean?
Was he good? I mean, is he going to really play every day? I mean, is he set in that lineup? What are the comps? What do we expect from him this season?
DVR, what do you think?
I'm trying to figure out why Cushing likes him. I mean, Walker hits the ball really hard, so that's a Statcast red ink mark in his favor. The playing time, I think, is probably why Cushing likes him. If we're deconstructing the Cush bot, as I think we probably should, because we should learn what he does and apply those for our own benefit.
He's going to enjoy that. Go ahead.
It's, you know, playing time is huge. There's no one really pushing him at first base right now. Like, what's Arizona going to do? If they're not playing Christian Walker against same-handed pitching, who's taking that playing time over this season?
Asdrubal? Maybe Asdrubal?
He's pretty old, man. Like, I like him as a deep, deep league filler, but I don't know. I don't think he's that much of a threat. He does switch hit, so, okay, there's one guy that could do it, but less power for sure. Probably a lower OBP. Who else is on that depth chart that is a shot? I mean, Kevin Crone's gone now, so the redundant mashing righty who's old for the minors isn't there lurking in the background anymore. Seth Beer, maybe. Like I don't see him as a big threat. Pavin Smith plays a little bit in the outfield.
I like Paven Smith. I really do. I could see Paven Smith getting some time. He came up last year. He had a little cup of coffee. I like Paven Smith. Maybe that's what I don't know. I think back in 2019, he had he stole some bases. I think that was a big thing for him, where he was like, hey, he's running. Cushing was like, he's running. He's like Paul Goldschmidt part two. I was like, not really. But 29 home runs in 2019. And then last year, I mean, his average was 271. I guess it's not bad. I never kind of look out for him. He's just, you know, there are blind spots of players all over. There have to be. And Christian Walker is a blind spot for me. I just don't know what to do with him, so I don't really do much with him. But, I mean, where do we have him ranked in first base? Like, is he a top 18 first baseman?
Yeah, probably around there. Yeah, that's about right.
You can put this in the rundown if you want us to be ready with this stuff, man.
Sorry about that. It just occurred to me because we were talking about Rowdy Tellez. So that made me think of first baseman. I mean, our friend Justin Mason has him exactly at 18 and calls him an underrated asset.
Hmm. Yeah.
Hold on. I'm looking up Gene McCaffrey's.
He's right before. Yeah, I probably should have done that, but because the Athletic and all. But I don't know. I mean, you know, who are you taking, Christian Walker or CJ Cron?
I think Walker has more job security, so that would probably be the difference. Their ADPs are almost identical since March 1st, looking at the NFBC ADPs. And you know who Christian Walker might be? He might be the more grown-up version of Ryan Mountcastle.
Oh.
I mean, wow. Look at the numbers. Like it's a pretty good batting average. It's a solid OBP and power, and he plays in a corner, and he can't really play anywhere else. I think that's a reasonable sort of comparison. Maybe Mountcastle has a little more batting average ceiling, but that's sort of what I think Ryan Mountcastle is going to become over time. So maybe that's why I'm not that excited about him, because we're not that excited about Christian Walker, and Walker's cheaper than Mountcastle right now.
Yeah, I guess. There are guys like if you told me that I could get I just rather wait, right? Like I'll take Miguel Sano over Christian Walker for the upside, because I think he could have a monster year. But again, who knows? I mean, maybe Christian Walker is going to be the breakout player for Arizona. I've never bought it yet. I haven't bought it yet, but maybe. Who knows?
I wonder why, man. Like, well, I mean, I know we're working out why, but like his minor league numbers are good. His one big season that he had. And I think this is in the Humidor era of their field. He had nearly 30 home runs. He stole 8 bases. He's got that sneaky, before people realized Goldschmidt had speed. I mean, I guess he's old. You know, he toiled in the minors for a while. He was blocked forever in Baltimore by like every first baseman ever that Baltimore
had. Davis.
Yeah.
During that time, Chris Davis was good when he was in Baltimore. I mean, so, I think they probably moved him for that. I think that's
what the outfield too.
Christian Walker, but I mean, like that. I think that's what I see is like in 2015, 2016, 550 at bats, 592 at bats, 18 home runs. You know, but he's a lot older now, and there's been a lot more development. I just don't know if I buy 2019 as fully as all that. But 2019 is a nice season. It's nice. It really is. It's a good season. 8 stolen bases, 29 home runs, 603 plate appearances, played every day. Played every day last year too. I don't know. His projection for ATC gives him 23 home runs, 75 runs, 76 RBIs, and 3 stolen bases with an 8.8 walk rate, 24% strikeout rate. So, I mean, I guess that's, you know, if you're going to get him for your corner infield, I guess that's not bad.
Oh, Ian has gone full on sweating Ariel now.
Well, I'm not doing any impressions of him today.
You didn't quote the bat.
Shout out there.
You didn't quote Jake Seeley. You're just like,
sorry, man. I'm on Fangraphs, and so yeah. Well, the bat's very similar. All of these projections are very, very similar. They're all in the same. I mean, they're all in the same sort of setup here.
Hey, I got a random question for you guys. When projections are like that, when they're clustered really closely together, and I would say Walker has some of the most similar projections across systems, at least in Fangraphs that I've seen this draft season, does that make you more confident in that projection and that player? Or does it make you think the player's kind of boring and, I don't know, like, does it give you some other sort of reaction?
By the way, like, just a plug here, Al Melchior wrote this exact column that's up today. He looked at the three. He looked Steamer, the Bat, and the Bat X, and ATC, and tried to find outliers between, like, because he's like, they're usually in agreement, but there are some players here, and he put 8 out there, one
who
in each position.
Do you mind throwing those out?
I can do that.
Though that should be Al's show, but I'd be curious to hear.
By the way, Jake Seeley has Christian Walker for 24 home runs, 4 steals, and a .261 average.
He's a little higher than everybody else.
I told Jake he's got to come up with a name for his projection system. Like you know, it's like we have Jake's projections on our site, but he has.
I think I got it. The Jakes. How about the Jakes?
What would it stand for?
Jake's.
All right. Thanks.
I was going to try and get all in there somehow, so I'm going to work on an acrostic. Well, you know, normally, Nando, you're searching eBay for player names. I'm going to try and name Jake's projection system.
While we're talking about right. players, Nando's like, wait a minute, I'm looking it up. Yeah. I want to see if it's rookie cards available. Is it signed? Is it mint? It's mint. I got to buy it, Ian. It's mint.
Let me tell you, you know, one of the things we didn't hit last week, I actually went and did these Jose De Leon 5x7s, like they're poster sized. There are 10 of them. You know, they're out of 10. And there was like 3 of 10, 2 of 10, and 6 of 10 all available. So I'm basically going to try and get all 10. It's going like 20 years, I'll be searching for that 8 of 10 somewhere off a tip.
It'll be in someone's basement in an unopened box, you know.
Yeah.
And you'll be like, I must get number 8. I'm missing 8.
It's been thrown away.
It's him holding a canary.
Oh, it's, yeah. Okay, here are Al's players. Let's not get too off. Come on, guys. Can we please keep it?
Yeah. Sure. Here we go.
Mitch Garver, catcher. CJ Cron, first base. Nick Madrigal. Sure. Justin Turner. Dansby Swanson. Eddie Rosario. Kenta Maeda. And Zach Plesac.
Those are interesting players. Those are players that you really can have a wide variety of views about. Really all of them.
Yeah, that's what he's saying. He's got like the roto values. You know, the bad X for just, I'm pulling up like Nick Madrigal. And I don't, by the way, there's $1 a month. If you go to Al's, if you Google this, find Al's story, you subscribe for $1 a month. There's a special running on it.
Dollar a month. Look at that. Hey,
$1 a month for 6 months. And then I think after that, it goes to like $7.95 or whatever.
I have two partners. Okay. I have many partners, but two partners who have wildly different views of Nick Madrigal. We have Brett Sayre, who considers him one of the best players in baseball, like a must buy in every situation that you can get him. And then Robert Mershak, which I will explain in a moment why I do, who just literally says, you have Nick Madrigal on your team, you're not going to win. You will never win if you have. There's no way to win with Nick Madrigal on your team. And I say, that's, I don't know if I really agree with that. And he says, no, there's no way that you can win if you have Nick Madrigal on your team. The reason I sing is because Robert Mershak, if you don't know, is an agent for opera singers. That is his job. That's why I do the opera sound. Because someone said, why do you sing after you say Robert Mershak's name? Oh, because he's an agent for opera singers. Anyway, that's what it said. What are the different spots on Madrigal?
So the Bad X has him 3 home runs, 15 steals, .283 average, and $4. Yeah. Ariel Cohen has him at 4 home runs, 15 steals, .296 average, and $2 roto value. Yeah. And then Steamer has him at 7 homers, 20 steals, .305 average, and $11.
I think I'm closer to Steamer, maybe not on the home runs, but on the average and on the stolen bases.
All right.
I think maybe 4 or 5 home runs, but I think he could scoot 22 stolen bases and hit about 300. That's why I disagree with Robert on that. I think that Madrigal is a valuable. I think he'd be a good middle infield piece. Would you take Madrigal, DVR, as a middle infield piece?
I usually don't, but I think if I were light on speed and I felt like I loaded up on power early, he could fit in a build like that.
Yeah.
He's weird. I mean, 4 home runs as a pro in the minors, it's about 150 or so minor league games, if I'm doing the math correctly on the fly. And it's strange to see projection systems that have him hitting 6 or 7 home runs over a full big league season, because there's very little evidence of power. That's just not his game.
But I do see that. How many stolen bases in those 152 games?
Quite a few. Let's see. He was 17 for 21 at high A. He was 14 for 20 at double A.
Not great.
4 for 7 at triple A. As he moved up, the success rate did come down a little bit.
Quite a bit.
The other problem, here's the problem. Like, that's one of the ways that Nick Madrigal's eventually going to get paid, right? Through arbitration and eventually through free agency. If he ends up being a solid big league player, it's because of his glove and his hit tool and his speed. Do the White Sox need him to run with the way that offense is built? How many green lights is he really going to get?
I mean,
What's Tony La Russa like? You got to go back like 20 years to figure out his tendencies.
I mean, that's the age of Ozzie Smith and Vince Coleman. You know, I mean, it's an older style of baseball. I think if you can run, you put a lot of pressure on the defense. I wouldn't be surprised if he does get the opportunity to run.
Who runs on that team?
Louis Robert runs on that team.
Right, but I mean, like, who's like
runs
their
on that team? Tim Anderson.
Yeah, they just got like a bunch of 20 steal guys, basically.
Yeah, I just think Madrigal, if he hits 300, let's say in AL only, I didn't get him in AL only, but in AL only, I think he has a good amount of value for average. He'll help protect you. You combine him with a Joey, with a, you know, Giancarlo Stanton or with a Miguel Sano, and it'll balance out your average, and you've got the, you know, hopefully upside power on Sano. Anyway, I don't know. I think that's a very interesting list that Al brought up, because those are guys that, like, I don't know what to do with. So I'm not surprised that there are different values. And back to your question, Derek, if I see that everyone sort of agrees that that's what the player is going to be, I tend to kind of buy into that a little bit. I mean, if you have everybody who's sort of saying Christian Walker is going to hit 23 home runs and have 75 RBIs and 68 runs and hit 250, that sounds right. You know, I'm willing to go into the draft knowing that. I'm not going to go out of my way to get him at that cost, but at whatever cost it is, I think is a better use of it. But at least I can understand and see him as a, you know, in that Rowdy Tellez area of who you're going to get your corner infielder, and you'll probably get more at bats from Christian Walker. I think you're probably right. All right. Well, there it is.
All right. I like it. So we like him now.
We, you know, 1 to 10, I'll give him a 5. That's fine.
It sounds about right.
Sounds like where you started.
Yeah. Like it's nice.
Well, I started at a 3. So getting him to, like, I started as a, he's not really on my board. He's not somebody who I'm interested in really at all. Like, I almost am, you know, so I have interest in other players in that area.
You don't feel like you're winning your league because of that pick. But when you look at the players around him, we mentioned Crone, Jake Cronenworth, who's a utility sort of guy, super utility guy. Andrew Vaughn, who, you know, brings the ceiling, and
I would bring Vaughn. See, I would take Vaughn over Christian Walker. I would do that, and I would fill the spot for the 3 weeks before Vaughn shows up, and then go with Vaughn. Wouldn't you?
I like Vaughn better straight up because of ceiling, but
yeah,
I mean, I look at Vaughn, I say, okay, like, how could it go wrong? Like, if he doesn't hit enough, and to hit and to keep a job at first base and DH, you do have to hit a lot. It's a contending team. There's a world in which Andrew Vaughn doesn't hit enough to keep that job this season, even though he's the long-term solution. He's going to be a great player long-term. I have no doubts about that. One of the safest hitters in his draft class. If Vaughn's not hitting enough, the White Sox can trade for an expiring contract veteran, option Vaughn down to the minors mid-season for a little while, you know, bring him back up as an extra guy in the second half, and then in 2022... run it back and try it again with him as a fixture in that lineup. That's a possibility.
But so from a draft perspective, but DVR, from a draft perspective then, doesn't it make more sense to take the shot on Vaughn? So, I mean, I think the thing that tipped me over the top with Vaughn was when he stole that base. And I was like, oh, you're going to run too, are you, young man? And because if he doesn't, then you pick up, there's always a guy in the corner who's on the wire who can give you decent, pretty much.
Yeah,
I'm thinking 15-team league. 12-team league, it's not even a question. You're not taking either of them. Well, maybe you'll take Christian Walker, but I'd rather go for the upside there.
See, I think
play the wire for the replacement.
I think in a 12, I'm definitely more likely to take Vaughn. In a 15,
right, sure.
I think it's closer to even because of the possible downside for playing time with Vaughn or the wait for a few weeks. But I think Jared Walsh is in this cluster too. I think we've talked about him as someone we like, but he's not... He's probably not going to play as much as Christian Walker. So I do think Christian Walker's playing time is one of the best arguments for him, especially as a fringe top 200 guy.
And is he really that high? Is he 200?
210 since March 1st.
Wow. Yeah, no, I'm not doing that. I'm not doing that. Too many pitchers I like in that area. Too many other players I like in that area. So maybe that's why, is that I'm always targeting somebody in that group. It's interesting to see, like, how different parts of drafts, how, you know, there are certain, like, areas. It's why I prefer auctions by so much, because I want to be able to pick the guys in the groups that I like. You know, I don't, if I don't want, if there's not a guy I want at 78 and I got to drop down to 96 to get a guy and reach for a guy from 96 because there's nobody in that 78 area. Similar there with like 210. I'm not going to take Christian Walker. I'm just not going to do it. I'm going to wait. I'm going to wait and get one of the later first basemen that I even with this new understanding of Christian Walker, that he actually, you know, I'm still not going to do it.
I'm the same with those, with the 50s. I think there's like Glasnow, Guerrero, and Judge. And Pete Alonso are all like lumped together within four picks of each other. That's auction. I'm going to get them all. Like, I'm going to spend up for all of them and just ignore the top 50 altogether, probably. But you're right. In a draft, there's no way I'm getting all four of them.
Yeah, it's frustrating. That is a frustrating part of drafts.
Well, you got to make choices. Really, you know, it's important.
Auction is so much more fun. So, and I know it's harder.
All right, let's not be that show, though. You know,
well, no, but I'm just speaking for my own personal opinion. For me personally, auction is just, I've done this long enough to know that in terms of enjoyment of experience, it's like instead of the kind of boredom into the anxiety, right? It goes into you're just constantly playing the game. You can be in on every player that you like because there's always a value for a guy. Even if you don't like him, there's always a value. I mean, if I can get Christian Walker for $3 in, we're doing Tout Wars this weekend, Tout Mixed Auction. And if Christian Walker's sitting there for $3, I'm not going to turn him away.
Who's in that
$3? Derek Van Riper's in that league. Ooh, not good. Not good. Jeff Zimmerman is in that league. Brent Hershey is in that league. So it's a
Zinke?
DVR, you can name more people in that league than I can.
Zinke in that league?
He used to be. No. He's in the NL league now.
Pianowski?
Yep.
Yep.
Nice.
Pianowski's in the league.
I love Pianowski. I love being in leagues with Pianowski.
Yeah? Why?
He's just a great trader.
Cool. Good to know. I like trading.
He's easy. Not like, I don't know. He's not overly concerned with him getting ripped off, and I'm not overly concerned with me getting ripped off. It's just like a very easy trade negotiation with him. It's like, I like this player. You like that player. I also like this guy. Oh, I also like this guy. All right. That seems fair. Let's do it.
Speaking of which, I did the Toolshed podcast with Chris Clegg and with my friend Eric Cross this past weekend. It was really fun. And we just talked Dynasty and talked a lot of trade talk. So if you want to check it out, you should check it out.
All right. DVR, you got anything to plug?
No.
All right.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Yeah.
Well, let's move on. Right. Somebody highlighted, do you guys diversify or pick the same players generally? You want to jump on that? That was a Nando DVR. Thought. A deep, late Nando thought.
DVR?
I think
you go first. I just talked a lot.
Yeah, I think you were kind of tap dancing around it when you were describing, you know, how you have certain pockets of players that you like in drafts and identifying those players in an auction. It's easy to go get them. So I think in an auction especially, if you played in 5 auctions, you'd probably have pretty strong overlap from roster to roster because you have so much control over how you build. In drafts, I think maybe if you had 5 drafts and they were kind of stretched out over all the different draft positions somewhat evenly, then you might have a more diversified group of players. But I still think we have targets that we like based on overall prices, and we tend to go get our guys. So for me at least, I think I have a smaller group of players across all my leagues than I did when I started playing, 15 years ago now. It's been a while, but I think I start to hone in on players that the market is, I believe, wrong about, and I try to get those players as many times as I possibly can to maximize value.
You know, I used to be that way fully, and I'm kind of changing my tune a little bit where, you know, I've got my guys. These are my guys. Yeah, all right. Like in the AL labor, there were some of my guys, quote guys, I'm playing the value game now in a much more significant way. So like I said, I'll take Christian Walker at $3 ahead of Rowdy Tellez at $7, even though I like Rowdy more. I like the value on Christian Walker more there. So I'm really, you know, when we go into this draft this week, I'm getting closer to the way Larry Schechter plays, getting closer to the way Ariel plays and Cushing plays. This idea that we have our values and you got to stick with them, you know, and you don't want to overspend, because then all of a sudden you find yourself and you're buying players that you don't like. So you may get that one guy that you really wanted, and then it turns on your back, and all of a sudden you gotta suffer with a bunch of guys that you don't want, and you have to force into play. And then you get $1 players, which, depending on the format you're in, you can get away with. Certainly in a 12 team league, you can get away with $1 players all day. But in a 15 team league, it's not necessarily a good way to play the game. It's not my style of playing the game. DVR, you're a little bit more of a stars and scrubs guy, I've noticed through the years. Is that still true, would you say?
Yeah, for the most part, but you can't. What's always the
thought
process?
If you don't mind sharing your thought process about that.
I've found historically.
Don't do it, DVR. He's trying to figure you out for this. He's scouting you.
It's fine.
He's Ariel Cohen scouting.
I don't think I'm that complicated to scout. I think you can kind of look at my rosters and go, oh, that's what he likes to do. I don't think the type of rosters I build is a secret at all. But I think the reason I do it, I think a lot of times people are in deeper leagues unwilling to take on the uncertainty with the playing time of prospects. And in labor in particular, I have felt like the players who were likely to debut this season have been undervalued pretty much since I joined the league. I don't know if it'll always be that way, and if it's not always that way, then I'll have to make an adjustment. But I feel like throwing those darts, I mean, last year I think Alec Bohm was only a couple bucks, right? Mm-hmm, finding players like that late, Dylan Carlson was cheap last year. Those guys are huge sources of profit if you don't go overboard and have too many of them, if you don't create too many playing time holes in your roster, and if you're good at identifying a couple of hitters or a pitcher or two in the reserves who can keep things afloat until those young players come up. So I guess I feel like in deeper leagues, I have a pretty good sense for when those players are going to come up and who's going to likely just at least hold their own, even if they don't crush. I think all you have to really do is hold your own and keep the job in a league that deep. I think for mixed leagues, it's more of a philosophy about replacement level. I want to go star heavy because you're not going to find stars on the waiver wire most years. Maybe one or two surprises emerge, but I'm comfortable churning over the bottom third or even bottom half of my roster and finding upgrades on the wire throughout the season. I feel like you can use that as an extension of your roster really effectively in mixed leagues, so you want to have as much high-end value locked into your roster as you possibly can. And maybe it's possible that I am leaving some value out on the table. Maybe the way that Larry and Ariel play, like maybe that's the optimal way. And Cushing, like they have a ton of success. But I think you...
So do you.
I think you have to play ways, though. I think you have to be able to play both.
Yeah, I agree.
If the room... like, so a lot of times, the mixed tout wars auction, the last couple of years, it's played really aggressive. And if the whole room is going stars and scrubs, the value in that strategy starts to go away. And you have to pivot, and you have to go more balanced. So, you know, it might be time for a change just because of how everybody else is playing it. That's part of the problem that you have to solve, too.
That's so true. I mean, I think that's something that's underrated and hard. It's a hard part of the game, is understanding, you know, it literally is like playing a basketball game or a football game where you're actually on the field, where things are moving so fast and you realize, whoa, I was planning for a ground game. Like I wanted to do a ground game, but what I'm seeing is they got three linebackers in the box. They're bringing up their strong safety. See, I know football. And I don't, you know, I'm not going to be able to make this move. All right, I got to go. I'm going to go to my five wide receiver set and sort of break that up. And then eventually you gotta figure out what the defense is giving you. And everyone who's out there, you know, you have to be paying attention. You have to see where the room is and where the angle is. And it's something that's hard to do. It's not simple. It's not obvious. It's not easy. So you got to really read it. It's like, all right, so and these stars are going for $4 more. Well, that means later, one thing Ariel has shared with me and I've learned is that if it's going to go more at the top, that means that there's going to, you know, it's a zero-sum game. There's only, you know, $3,120 to go around. So if people are overspending at the top, that means there's going to be more value later. So you really have to, it's very fluid and you've got to really understand how the boat is moving. It's like 16 metaphors and like none of it makes perfect sense, but it sort of is around the idea of possibly making some sense.
I love the math behind that, but I like in practice, I don't think it works because there are 15 teams doing 15 different things. So like, yeah, if there's a lot of money early, that money that's left over, that isn't left over, is going to be chopped off where? At the middle? Like, is it going to turn a $7 guy into a $1 guy? Is it going to turn a $16 guy into an $11 guy? Like, there are just so many places where you can save that money elsewhere that I don't know if that means you got to automatically shift to there's going to be a bunch of $1 values out there because, you know, I could buy $50 guys and then spend in the middle or just hold it all till the end and outbid everybody by a buck.
I mean, there's value to that. There are few things as much fun as getting to your end game and having control of it, you know? And it's like that. And it's what happens like 4/5 of the way through the draft where you spend that little extra money. Like I took an AL Labor. I took Mike Minor for $8, right? And I had, I think, like $16 left or $14 left. And as soon as I did that, it made my last two players really smaller. Like you couldn't go as high on him. So, and again, that's AL Labor. I mean, Mike Minor's not going to be $8 in Tout Wars, I wouldn't think, this weekend. But it's interesting. It's super interesting and super fun. And I don't even mind. I know everyone's sad that we don't all get to be in the same room this year. We will next year, hopefully. But I just enjoy doing it. Like, it's just 5 hours of fun for me.
Sitting at home? You going to have a drink?
No. That's like drinking when you're playing poker. I remember when I first went to Las Vegas, I was like, really? I can get a free drink? They're like, sure, keep sitting at the blackjack table. We'll give you all the drinks you want. So no. I'm going to be as clear-headed as I possibly can.
I got drunk once at Tout Wars.
It was great. You said it right.
That was probably one of my best years.
Was it really one of your best years?
My inhibitions were, you know what I mean? Like, I'm just like, yeah, I you know, it's like you're walking in there and you're looking at a list of players for the first time. I was just a little more brave about doing the extra buck and going after a guy.
Yeah, I guess so. I meditate twice a day and I try to make sure that I get my second meditation in about an hour before so I can be as grounded as I possibly can, because so much in life is going to throw you off your balance. That's what life is about, keeping your balance when the wind is blowing. And meditation really helps for me personally. So that's what I do to balance myself as I go into that draft, because there's going to be a moment where you go, damn, I can't believe I didn't get that guy. Oh my God. And then how are you going to respond? Same thing in Little League Baseball. How are you going to everyone's going to make mistakes. It's how you respond to the mistakes that's going to decide how you do, whether it's on the Little League field, whether it's in the auction, or whether it's in life. If you get into an argument with somebody early in the day that you probably shouldn't have done, how are you going to handle that? Is it going to affect the rest of your day? Are you going to be able to learn from your mistakes? And that's the big question in life, isn't it?
I guess so.
There you go.
That's you got deep there.
Sorry about that.
How am I going to bring up Ross Stripling now?
Are we underrating Ross Stripling?
I think so.
Is he got a job, man?
Does anyone? They're going to be 6-man rotations. So people are counting these 5-man rotations like it's gospel still, but basically every team is going to have a 6th man in there who's going to get 12 starts as a baseline, right? And if Ross Stripling's good, I mean, there are always injuries. Let me put it this way. Joel Pinheiro's first column is coming up tomorrow, I think. And it's really good, and it's like really insightful about spring training and like what pitchers are doing in spring training, like throwing all sliders, stuff like that. Stuff we knew, but it's kind of cool hearing it from a guy who was actually doing it. And he said, hey, fun fact, I was part of the last rotation where all 5 of us made every start back in Seattle in 2013.
Fact. He was pretty good. I liked Joel Pinheiro.
He's a good dude.
Is Ross Stripling for real? I don't know. I know that 2-3 years ago, he did really well on my teams and I liked him a lot. And then last year, you know, he's got a funny combination of pitches. He does not throw terribly hard. His curveball is like this old fashioned, like looping curveball. And he just looked a little overmatched in the AL East once the trade came through. To me, that's how he looked. But I always liked Ross Stripling. I don't mind him. DVR, what do you think?
I like him where he's going. He's cheap. Nate Pearson's got a groin injury. He's probably not ready for opening day. So Stripling should be in the rotation, whether it's 5 or 6. I wonder, it's a broad question. Maybe you guys hate this question. If you do, we'll move on. But do you think people are just flat out wrong about teams adjusting their pitching this much? I mean, what's the reasoning behind this? Why do teams and why do we think that pitchers will just break down and not be able to get through this season? Why do we really think that?
I like it. I like the six-man rotation idea. I like the idea that guys have more time. You know, back in the 70s, there were four-man rotations. I mean, literally, can you imagine? Guys were throwing 270 innings a season. Nolan Ryan was throwing, you know, Steve Carlton would throw that many. He'd strike out 310 guys. Can you imagine? I think it's smart. I definitely think it's smart. I advocate for it. I also think, just to look at Ross Stripling real quick, if Tanner Roark is in that rotation, oh my God, Ross Stripling should definitely have a spot. But Nando, what do you think about the pitching this season?
Well, I think it's going to be weird, and I think it's going to be different for every team. And I like, we can't just throw a blanket on it all and kind of put it all under the same thing. Like, I don't know if there's a way
throw
to get
a
around
blanket?
The fact that a lot
what,
of guys,
what is,
you know,
I'm sorry.
Threw 60 to no, 70 no. to 80 innings last year, you know, on the top end. And I guess you just got to have some kind of faith that, like, I would say, like, the Trevor Bauer types were smart enough, you know, in March when everything got shut down to, like, go, you know, back to their old high school and pitch like a 7-inning simulated game, you know, every, maybe even every 10 days, just to, you know, so maybe their arm has these innings. You know what I mean? Because you got to be looking forward to the next year and saying, like, well, even if this season is canceled, or even if the season's only 60 games, I got to have 120, 130 innings on this arm, and I'm not going to reach it if I just go over the natural course of a 60-game season. So that's why, like, that's why this season I've just been reading a ton and trying to figure out, like, if any players are talking about how, you know, who pitched in the winter leagues, who pitched in Puerto Rico, like, whose arm has those innings on it right now, where they're going to be able to handle more than, you know, 120, 130 without, you know, worrying about getting hurt. So
I don't think they're going to get hurt,
I've
but I think
kind
they're going
to
protect
very
them.
Loose. Liking the same pitchers I liked before, because the logic can go in a major circle when you just start trying to figure out and deduce without anybody actually telling you what they did, you know, who's going to be able to throw this many innings and who's not going to be able to throw this many innings. And, you know, it was always very obvious, like Julio Urias can only handle, you know, 120 innings because he's never pitched more than 60. But now it's just like, that's a different 60 innings that people threw last year. It's probably, it could be hiding a lot of innings. Could be hiding a lot of side work, could be hiding a lot of all-season work. So I'm just kind of going with the players I like and who have skills and then hoping that things work out in their favor.
DVR, what about you? What's your thought?
I don't think teams have reasons for their plans that make a lot of sense. And if they do have reasons for their plans, they're probably not sharing them publicly. I think in my mind, I keep hearing, I think it was Alex Anthopoulos. He was asked about increasing the workload of young pitchers, like in the minors, year over year. And someone said, you know, 35 to 40, why? And the answer was basically, well, that's what we've always done. And I think we give teams a little too much credit as far as how scientific they are about this. I think most people are thinking about this the way Nando described it. Oh, this guy didn't throw enough innings last year, so he can't throw that many innings this year. I don't know if it works like that. I don't think it's necessarily like a savings account where to throw 180 this year, you had to throw 180 last year. I don't think that's necessarily true. And I think if you went through a normal off season, like if you started your workouts in November, December, whatever you normally do to prepare for a season, you're doing your weightlifting, you're doing your cardio, you're throwing, you're working on stuff, and you go into spring training, and everything from the end of last season, regardless of its length, through the beginning of this season, if that was your normal progression that you would have had in 17 or 18 or 19, I guess I don't see why we should be compelled to believe that the absence of innings from one season is somehow indicative of injury problems or increased risk or reduced workloads in the upcoming season. I'm just increasingly of the belief that people pushing pitching even further into the early rounds are loud wrong this year with their approach. They're doing it for the wrong reasons. It could work. You can do something for dumb reasons and still get a good result. That's totally possible. But I just think we're not really asking any sort of why questions or getting clear enough why answers to believe that this is going to be as much of a cluster year with pitching as people are making it out to be.
I think it's just a riskier year for pitching. I mean, pitching is always risky, but I think this year is just riskier. That's why the older veteran guys, I think teams will be a little bit more careful with their younger pitchers, right? So Sixto Sanchez is going to be on an innings limit this year. There wasn't much talk about innings limits last year because everyone was on innings limit last year. But I think with the younger pitchers, teams have a lot of control over them, they're going to be very mindful about those guys. I think for the veteran guys, the Dallas Keuchels of the world, they're going to pitch, you know, and they're not worried about their long-term development. Sort of, it's just like, you know, get out there and do it. I have to ask, Nando, what does it mean to throw a blanket on something?
Oh, you know, like just to, like, generalize, you know what I mean? Like the same blanket is covering everything.
Ah, all right. That's a really good answer.
You never heard that? Hey, by the way, I'm sorry. I just realized that I had knocked my headphones out. So my monologue there about the pitchers, I just thought you guys weren't talking. You might have been.
Oh, yeah. I popped in a couple of times and you just kept going. I was like, all right. Well, no problem.
I'm working with this old, I actually have wired headphones and it's very sensitive. So if I'm doing that thing where the laptop's on top of the cord to hold it into place. So it's bent a little bit. Yeah. So I'll have new ones by next week. But yeah, I just thought you guys weren't talking. And then when I stopped, I heard this faint Ian.
Like, no, oh, no, I tried to come in on the blanket. I was like, wait, blanket? I thought it was going to be our moment before the show. Can we move on to Jock Peterson, though? Bad. No, it's fine. Doesn't matter. Is he set to explode? That's what you wrote. Is he set to explode?
Yeah.
I have a thought about that. But Nando, do you think he's set to explode?
I don't know. So I got this guy used to listen to the CBS show. Craig in Chicago, and he would call in all the time and be like, hey, Craig in Chicago. He was awesome. And like, he's like one of those people who you're like, he knows a lot in what he's talking about. Like, this isn't just like a guy who needs help with the lineup. Like, this is a guy who wants to talk and like really get into it. And I don't know, like, we became like online friends over the years. Anyway, every year he kind of sends me like the guys he really likes. And this year he has been sending me so many like Jock Peterson home runs. And like, here's something great that's been written about Jock Peterson. And I hadn't considered it. And then I started digging. I'm like, you know, pair him with Ross Stripling is a guy who's kind of quote unquote platooned in a way and now has a chance just to thrive with everyday at bats. And this is kind of interesting. And Gene McCaffrey likes him too.
Yeah. I like Jock Peterson. I very much like Jock Peterson. I think that he has, some real potential to take off this year. I think he sort of had the handcuffs taken off of him. And I think that's what he said. He said that he felt like the handcuffs were on him in Los Angeles and that now he's really ready to maybe explode. We'll see. But I think he's definitely going to get some playing time.
DVR?
Kind of a Christian Walker in the outfield for me. I mean, low batting average, good OPP. I'm not convinced he's going to play a lot against lefties. So I do think you're looking at more like big side platoon playing time, but I think where he goes, he's a little bit underpriced. The concern for me is that Dodger Stadium is a much more power-friendly park than Wrigley Field. So I think the projections of low 30s home runs might be a touch on the aggressive side. I think it might be more like mid-20s.
Wait, is it? I don't want to sound like an idiot here, but I always thought Wrigley was power-friendly.
No, most days the wind blows in more than it blows out. When it blows in, it's pitcher friendly. When it blows out, it becomes really hitter friendly, but less often than normal.
That's interesting. Anyway, so Gene McCaffrey has a theory or a hope that, you know, yeah, he's great in one platoon, but they never let him play on the other side of the platoon, which kind of kills momentum. And if David Ross is going to let him just play, maybe you'll see a guy who can hit both because he's got some kind of rhythm going. I found that interesting. That's all.
Yep.
All right. Guys, don't pause anymore because I'm going to think something's wrong with my headphones.
the headphones
got a complex.
Sorry
now.
About that.
Damn it. All right. There's our Jock Peterson segment. I guess we got a little bit of time. This is, I mean, kind of heavy, but I want to get into like, so I was reading basically Mike Kirlin's spring training notes. Again, I'll suggest go check out Mike Kirlin's spring training. Just follow him on Twitter. He also puts him on Reddit. I think I actually found him on Reddit and then followed him on Twitter and then had a nice conversation with him. But it's really like amazing. Like he just tracks every day who's batting where and has a little note section and says what's happening. But looking at the Phillies, and Odubel Herrera is getting a lot of playing time and has basically worked his way back into the starting lineup. And it looks like he's going to be starting for the Phillies like every day. And I'm like, man, that's, you know, that's icky. I would not, like, it's one of those situations where I know he'll probably have some skill, but yeah, I just don't want him on my team. And then every time I look at it, whatever kind of draft I'm doing, Roberto Osuna is that top guy who's at the top of the queue, hadn't signed with the team yet, but, you know, skill's probably still there. And then that kind of got into Zach Plesac, who Al wrote about, and I just remember, like, his COVID thing and, you know, Ian Knucklehead thing. So anyway, I mean, we don't have to spend an hour on this, but I was just wondering, like, don't even get into the morality of it, I guess, but are you guys even looking at Odubel Herrera, who could be a starter and could, you know, have mix 15 team mixed league value for sure?
DBR?
Nope.
All right.
Not really. I mean, he's the kind of guy that maybe in the reserve rounds I might grab, but who knows what's going to happen out there. You got Kingery. I mean, but he looks like he's getting some time. Certainly is possible. You also have Roberto Osuna in there. Is that right?
Well, I mean, they both have domestic violence issues and suspensions behind them, but Osuna hasn't.
Yeah.
But like, say Osuna goes to a team where he could just work his way into the closer role.
I mean, in Chicago, where Craig Kimbrel is not really doing very well.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that could be a spot for him, but yeah, Osuna, there's no value to him right now. And Herrera, there is value maybe in the reserves, but look to see. I mean, if he stays really hot in spring, you know, he could be a reserve round pick.
I don't know. It's just like, this is one of those times where you're like, I don't want to say the sentence, but Odubel Herrera could end up being a value play in fantasy. And I guess it depends on how you play this game. Like, I'm just passing him over. Want nothing to do with him. But
is that why DVR for you?
I mean, they DFA'd him. I don't think they want him around anyway. But I do think people need to make their own calls in terms of whether or not they care about these types of issues with building a team. I'm not going to tell people how to think, but I don't think he's going to be on the roster very long. I think Adam Haseley, once he's healthy, is going to take over the bulk of the playing time in center field. And, you know, having him DFA'd and pass through waivers, that tells you a lot about how the organization feels about Herrera.
Yeah, he's in a minor league. He's NRI, isn't he?
Yeah. But again, I mean, maybe in the reserves, but that's about it. Certainly not in a 12-team league. There's no need to even consider Odubel Herrera at this time.
It just seems like the tide is turning in his favor for a starting job.
It could. So that's the kind of thing to keep your eye on here in spring training. And then if you see, well, he really is, grab him in the reserves, but probably don't need to grab him before then.
All right. We made it to the end of the rundown. We didn't really get to the Todd Zola getting angry because Tout's moving so slow. But
How far along is it?
I don't even know, man. But it is going really slow. Like, I keep thinking I'm missing emails. I'm at the turn. So, you naturally have to wait a while, but it's been a while.
Wow. Yeah. And is he in that league?
No, he's the SWAT. He's the commissioner.
It's tough.
He didn't really get mad, but he did write, like, hey, let's speed it up, guys. But this is one of the slowest drafts.
It's not like there's going to be trades.
Right?
I don't think there's, you know, so, but, you know, Todd Zola, if he gets mad, you don't want him mad.
But do you guys remember, like, two shows ago, we were picking my, I don't know, like, seventh and eighth round draft picks?
Yep.
Yeah.
That was a while ago, right? Hold on. I can tell you what round we're in right now. This is a 50-round draft. We are in round 41.
Wow. Yeah, you guys got to wrap it up probably. I mean, those drafts in NFBC are typically happening. You can kind of get them done in like a week at the most, maybe 10 days. So it seems like you guys have been going for a while. But, you know, people get caught up. They got stuff. They got life.
Your boys got Ty France.
Did you get Ty France?
Speaking of reaching, like, I'm this is a reach fest for me. I got all my guys, but I'm reaching hardcore for a lot of them.
Who got Ty France?
Yeah, I did. He's my starting first baseman at the moment.
Well, there you go. All right. It's interesting. Tout Wars has a 5-game eligibility, which is different.
Yeah.
5-game eligibility. That's pretty low, but I kind of like it.
I got to be honest, man. This year, like, I haven't even looked at those rules. I'm just, if they're available, because everything's online. So if they're showing up as draftable at that position, I'm just grabbing them.
Yeah,
I haven't really done a lot of work ahead of time about how many games it takes for them to be eligible.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's on me. Well, maybe that's unprofessional. But
well, I think one thing to be mindful of always is what the league setup is. So yeah, something to be mindful of. But maybe you can make the most of it and get yourself another first baseman. Because if Ty France is your starter, you need to get some backups.
Well, that's a hell of
I like him better at second base, personally.
Yeah, I think they just slotted him there naturally.
Yeah. Who else do you have in the backup of the first base situation?
My corner's JD Davis. None of my out, though. I want to hear this outfield. Joe Adell, Mitch Haniger, Aaron Judge, Kyle Lewis, Luis Robert. I got Ohtani in utility. Oh, I don't have any backup first baseman.
You better get yourself some first baseman.
Don't worry about it, man. It'll take care of itself. How did that happen? Hold on. This can't be right. That is right. Yoshi Tsugo is an outfielder, third. Oh, yeah. Look at that. This is amazing. This would be amazing. Could you imagine the disaster if Ty France got hurt?
Yes. You need to get yourself two more first basemen.
Let's see.
In the next 9 rounds.
Yeah, there aren't a lot of first base. Ryan McBroom. Greg Bird. Welcome to the team, Greg Bird. Oh, no. And Todd Frazier.
Todd Frazier, actually, I think is going to play. I think they're going to give him some time in Pittsburgh at first base.
You know who's available is our guy, Brian O'Grady. He's on San Diego now. I don't think he's going to play.
O'Grady hit 2 home runs yesterday.
We were talking about him before anybody else. Minor league stats.
I don't think he's going to play much. So you may want to get Todd Frazier.
Yeah, all right. I'll play with this. All right, I'm going to play with this. We got to go. Ian's got to go.
I do.
He's been sending us very large font notes in the rundown.
I didn't mean to send it in large font. It was just where it was.
Point. Got it.
Yeah. Sorry about that.
We understand. It's heading 3. All right. We're out of here then. See you later. For the man.
We'll see you next week.
Oh, yeah. We'll see you next week. Next week is going to be the heat of it all. So if you want, fantasypods@theathletic.com. Hit us up if you have some requests about some players you want us to talk about or anything. This is a show for the people. This is no rates and barrels. We'll take your emails and requests. Commission a show.
Hey, before we go, I just want to say, check out our new March Madness show. It's called The Ding U, and it's presented by BetMGM. We're going to cover all the action, both on the court and at the sports book, grabbing insight from the Athletic's college basketball writers and picking the brain of BetMGM's top bookmakers. You can check out the new show on the Daily Ding podcast feed and streaming on YouTube at 1 p.m. Eastern on Wednesday.
You guys good?
Yep.
Still there? All right.
Yep, still there.
For the man who used an entire podcast to scout his opponent's strategies and tout wars, Ian Kahn.
That is me.
For the man who just nudged Christian Walker up 72 spots in his personal rankings,
72 spots is a lot, but hey, you know, we'll move him up a little.
I hope you all had fun. Thank you for joining us. This has been Under the Radar. We'll see you next week.
Bye.
Good talk. Good talk.